I'm here representing the Generations Project, which actually ended this past spring. It was a collaboration project that was funded by the National AIDS Fund and Johnson & Johnson, focused on HIV prevention efforts for women from communities of color. And I want to, before I start, recognize two of our partners that are here with me today. One is Kate Perkins from the Maine Community AIDS Partnership, who is a convener of our collaboration, and Mick Mahan, who is one of our outreach staff, who is continuing to work with the project. And also, before I start, I want to let you know that we have a four-page just description overview of the program, and I've left copies of those in the back of the room. So when we started this project and started talking about it in the winter of 2005, one of the things that we were aware of, most of us who are working on it have worked in Maine for years, have done HIV prevention with other communities, was that within the tribal communities in Maine, HIV was still very much surrounded by stigma. There wasn't any active education, prevention efforts. There was some testing that was going on, and there was most of the attention had been on men within Native American communities and not on women and children. So what we were hoping to do when we started this project was to really look at the fact that there was so much stigma, how we could help reduce that, increase awareness of HIV as being a problem affecting Native communities, as well as tap into the matriarchal cultures in Wabanaki tribes. And the Wabanaki tribes that were involved in this were the Mi'kmaq and Passamaquoddy tribes. And I should say, when I introduced myself, as I said, I work with a migrant health program, and Maine is pretty unique in that probably 15 to 20% of our migrant farm workers are Native Americans who live both in Maine and in the Canadian Maritimes and participate primarily in our wild blueberry harvest. So when we started this, what we really were aiming to do was to basically, through the collaboration, identify women who could go into their own communities and begin to address the issues of stigma and really increase knowledge around risk and preventive practices. And it took a lot. I will say, you know, we've worked with Maine Community AIDS Partnership, but it had probably been about 10 years. Wabanaki Mental Health, we had no formal working relationship with. You know, probably a secondary goal of the project, certainly as identified by the funder, was to really build the capacity of this collaboration so that we were better able to meet the needs within the communities that we were serving both individually and collectively. Trying to find our way through that collaboration meant really spelling out how is it that we're going to work together, how will our outreach teams work together, will they be supervised by one person, will we basically do co-management. And the other piece that probably, for folks who aren't familiar with Maine, that played into this is Maine is a rural state, and you had folks who were living and working 3 to 4 hours apart. So really trying to find time for, as it says, all hands meeting so that we can have some face-to-face time to be checking in. And so I would say for that first 6 months to a year, what we were really focused on was building that team and building that collective identity as a project. I've already mentioned both of these. One of the things that, as we started the program, that our ultimate goal was to be building capacity within the tribe so that when we knew our 2 years of funding were up, that this would be sustainable and that there would be women, key women within the community who would be the go-to people around issues and questions related to HIV and AIDS? This is a picture of Sharon, and Sharon was one of our first outreach workers to work with the project and continues to work as a champion for the program. And Sharon made a decision in 2005, which was that for her to be able to kind of hit home the message that HIV does affect Native American communities, was to go public with her status as an HIV positive woman. And this was something that hadn't been done up to this point. Again, I think when you're living in urban communities, it may not seem like that big of a deal, so to speak, to be interacting with people with HIV disease. But for many of these closed communities, HIV seems as though it's not there. It's not part of the communities that they live in. And with Sharon basically going public, we began to be able to have those discussions with people in the community about how HIV had affected their lives, their families, and other members of the tribes. In terms of, actually, I'm going to skip ahead. So what we, when we started the program, what our goal was is to find key individuals, folks like Sharon, folks like Mi'kmaq Han. We knew they were the ones who already had that, it's not so much just stature in their community, but they were already the key opinion leaders. They were the women that folks went to if there were problems in their community. They were respected. Two of them represented more of traditionalists in terms of reclaiming traditional ways, and that those were the women that we knew would be key to the success of delivering the information. So what our goal was to make sure folks had the tools to do that, and we did that through training and through the capacity building of our partnership. Our program was and is continues to be basically an outreach program. The outreach goes on in one-on-one encounters. It goes on in terms of small groups. They may be part of women getting together for a sweat lodge. They may be women who are basically cooking dinner in a communal kitchen in a migrant camp. And then we also have targeted more large gatherings where we're really trying to, again, reduce the stigma by bringing HIV into forums where there are all members of the community, both young and old. And in terms of what we were, are the strategies that we used in outreach, again, it was about sharing accurate information, making referrals. One of the latter components to be added was counseling and testing, and that was really as a response to requests that we received both in those small one-on-one encounters as well as from the large gatherings. But I think one of the things that I want to emphasize that we really tried hard to incorporate was the storytelling piece and the testimonials. I already mentioned Sharon, but for Native culture, the oral tradition is much more important than handing someone a brochure or asking them to sit down and watch a video. So we really tried to honor that and make sure that we were doing most of our work face-to-face and in ways that there was an interchange between folks, again, who were being outreached to. We worked in a variety of settings. I mean, there's one of the folks that I work with on this project has said, you know, it's defining where outreach goes is basically where she has those free moments in her day. to be able to be sharing information. And as I mentioned earlier, for most of the women who were involved in doing the direct outreach, they were already the go-to people in their community. So folks were seeking them out once they had become recognized as having that HIV expertise or being able to connect them to resources. Basically, the process, it kind of reversed itself. It was no longer our responsibility to put ourselves out there, but we were more responding to folks who were coming to us and to the outreach staff. This was not a research-based project. It was a program that was funded, again, to increase capacity in the state to be able to better serve women of color. So really what we were looking at were process measures in terms of the types of services we were delivering, the number of contacts, the number of women who were tested, referrals, and then feedback that we were getting from both the champions and community leaders. I do think, you know, one thing that we did catalog and keep track of was what I would call community change in terms of, as I said, the paradigm kind of shifted and it became community-initiated requests of us to come for health fairs or to come and set up a counseling and testing event. And I should also say, in terms of our capacity, basically, if you look at how many folks we had who were doing this work, during the course of the 2 years, we had one person who worked 4 to 8 hours a week, one who was working 8 hours a week, and one who was working solely during the blueberry harvest. So it was pretty bare bones in terms of the person power. And for that reason, we were pretty proud that by the end of year two, we had tested 160 women and had contact with 750 individuals. I think the other caveat I would share is if you look at just census data from Maine, the number of tribal members in Maine is a little more than 12,500. Again, I've talked a bit about how the paradigm has switched. I think one story that really illustrates that is in the first year of the project, we were setting up some field-based testing to do during the harvest that would be done in migrant camps. And in my role, we do mobile services to migrant camps across the state and work with growers and kind of, I don't want to say we always have ready access, but pretty much we usually do. And for a grower that we had worked with probably for almost 15 years, they put up a red flag, so to speak, and their reception to the idea of us coming in to do counseling and testing was that it would, quote unquote, cause problems. And that, their interest was in getting their blueberries raked, getting the harvest done, and they didn't want anyone to be causing waves. For me as someone who I want to say I'm always kind of in action mode, it really had caused me pause to say, so what's going on here that it's okay that if I drove our mobile unit in and we were doing testing on that and no one knew it would be okay, but the minute we go public with the issue of HIV, we're dealing with these issues. And in subsequent, this past summer, that wasn't the issue. We have a group of camp health aides that we work with, and all of whom were saying, when are you going to schedule the testing night? When will you be here? The lessons learned for us have certainly been around really investing in our team and making sure that they had, again, the tools that they needed, making sure that they felt like they were adequately trained. Again, where most of them were working very part-time and sometimes in isolation, it really required that we were very thoughtful in terms of what tools we would give them to be able to deal with what might come up in their community. And as I've already mentioned, both HIV positive women and traditional healers were also key. They played different roles in our project, but the connections that they could make, as well as their reception within their own communities, was key to our success. And the part-time, full-time, I think this is one that, you know, I always struggle with in my role, which is even when we give folks the skills and we're only paying them to be working a handful of hours a week, they're basically always on call in their communities. And, you know, if something comes up that's related to HIV, it doesn't matter that your funding's run out. It doesn't matter that they've already worked their hours for the week. They're going to be the ones that that get the phone call in the middle of the night. And I think the only thing I would say is, you know, as we looked at our capacity building piece and what we could continue to do, you know, regardless of the fact that the project has ended, the collaboration has continued. The folks from Wabanaki Mental Health provide our camp health aides with key support and training in terms of looking at behavioral issues within the farm worker population. And the kind of next horizon for our collaboration is looking at both safe syringe disposal and the feasibility of doing needle exchange in tribal communities on tribal land. And before I close, I do want to recognize all of the women who have been involved with the program, because again, it's certainly has been the collective efforts that have made our program a success. Thank you.